You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for the Boston Celtics. Justin and John here. And opening night, well, for the Celtics tomorrow night, opening night for the NBA, happening as we literally speak and record this podcast. So everybody out there, I think getting a little geared up, getting a little excited, interesting preseason, not a lot of games, kind of a weird preseason for me that way. I'm used to seeing a few more games, a few more of those joint practices, things like that in the past. And, I also kind of like it because I think it's probably going to help these players stay healthy. And, you know, we're hitting the reset button. And so hopefully we're going to be back into a little bit more normalized training and off-season schedule for all these guys. And yet you see everybody on Twitter complaining, oh, here we go again. Can't start the season healthy. So Al Horford inactive for the first game. And John, I kind of want to start with, you know, what are your predictions, you know, for opening night? And yeah, I'd like to start with, what is the starting lineup? I don't think it's been announced yet, correct?
No,
it still
definitely
has
not.
Yeah. So we're still wondering who's going to fill that, who's going to fill that hole. And, with Horford out, maybe there's two positions that we're not certain about.
Yeah, no, I think that's right about that. I mean, so it looks like Jalen is, I think, questionable, I think is what they've termed it, to play tomorrow. I'm good with that. Like, I think that that's, perfectly, you know, I thought it was always questionable, honestly, as to what could happen. But I think that I'm going to assume Jalen's healthy. So I'm going to go right with Smart, Brown, Tatum, Rob Williams, because I'm going to assume the knee is good enough for him to play. And now we're down to what? We're down to one spot, right? We've been talking about this all year long. Where do you go? And I'll tell you, I'm going to go with the guy who we talked about so much after that last show, and then, you know, really had a couple good showings, I think, in the preseason, and that's Romeo Langford.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it on Romeo. I think he's the guy. I think, you know, there's other candidates. I think, you know, Schroeder had some good moments. That's probably belittling how good he was, but I think Romeo is, I think they like him in that spot of kind of a, not someone who's going to be heavier with the ball, but is going to move it, is going to defend well. So yeah, I'm kind of leaning Romeo at this point and, you know, prepare to be completely wrong, but that's where I'm going. What do you think?
No, that's the lineup I had. If Peyton Pritchard didn't have the broken face, then I probably would have gone Schroeder, to be honest with you. But I think they're not totally sure, you know, how Peyton Pritchard's going to play. And I think they're going to want to reserve Schroeder for the bench as a result of that, you know, somebody coming in off. And I still think there's a high likelihood that that's the case for him a good majority of the season. But I think there's an argument for him to be in that starting lineup. And I might have made that argument had Peyton been not smashed. So with that in mind, we've heard a lot from Ime about doing a big lineup and wanting bigs out there. I think the only potential sneak attack in lieu of Romeo would be, you know, Hernan Gomez. There's seriously a chance there. And I know that's where they started the preseason, but they might want to keep somebody like Grant Williams on the bench. But honestly, I think Langford earned it. there's a spot, for him in this lineup, and he shot his way and played his way and showed confidence throughout the preseason to earn that. So I think even from just as simply, like, even if it wouldn't have been the choice that they'd make in games 2, 3, 4, 5, matchups dictating the, you know, I don't think that that's really an issue for Langford tomorrow night, but sometimes matchups, but I think regardless of all of that, I think Ime wants to reward a player who probably played as good as anybody consistently every game of the preseason. And so he gets the call.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of looking at it. I think that he, you know, I kind of got a little bit of, I don't know, I don't want to say flack, but I think there was some support there too from other corners that I think there's a lot of people sleeping on Romeo. You know, yeah. We talked quite a bit about him, and I think it kind of, it came before.
We had even more on Twitter, right? We had our,
right.
Well, that's kind of conversation with Byron. I was like, don't sleep on Langford. And then he goes off the next night.
But right. And so I posted that and then, you know, we kind of got going on that. And then, you know, stuff starts happening. People, you know, and I just felt like I listened to another podcast that was basically putting him fifth out of all of the young guys. And admittedly, I mean, look, he's had a star-crossed start to his career. I'm not going to bury the lead on that. It's obvious. He's really struggled, with injuries and opportunities. And I mean, there's just a whole bunch of reasons why it hasn't gone well. It's pretty clear. Like, it's not like a surprise that that's the case, but you know, he still is the 14th pick. He's defended his butt off when he's had opportunities to, at least on the defensive end, which probably was the biggest question going into it. And it really what was left is, can he shoot and can he generate enough offense to make himself worthwhile? And the shooting certainly helps. But to me, the real trick with Romeo experience is, can he get the ball in his hands, get downhill and create offensive opportunities for himself and others? And I think we saw that in the preseason. That to me is the trick of, okay, now we can start to build off that. And now can we take that and turn that into something that's a little bit greater. And I think that that's pretty clear, that path is there for him, if he continues playing the way he has. And that's not to denigrate Pritchard or Neesmith, who I think also had good preseasons as well. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys earned, I think, more of a look. And obviously made everyone kind of say, well, maybe we don't need Josh Richardson. his vaccination status is helping that too, by the way.
But Pritchard's shooting definitely, if Langford hadn't been nailing the three ball as well, mm-hmm. Pritchard's shooting definitely puts him, just because they're going to, especially if they're going to go in this double big lineup, you know, in general, his shooting can open things up quite a bit. Now, if you are going to go Horford and Lob Williams, there really isn't a spot to put a Pritchard or a Neesmith or a Langford. But I can see where, based on health, especially Rob, like, let's see how that goes, that they're going to slot somebody in there. And they're going to want, if they do take out one of those bigs, they're definitely going to want another shooter, because they're going to be moving Tatum a lot closer to the basket. So that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I know. I think that's right. And to that end too, let's also say that the Tatum playmaker stuff, the nuggets
reports of, you mean? Yeah.
The nuggets of that are really helpful for his development and growth. I mean, look, I'm not expecting his high side outcome is Larry Joe Bird over my shoulder here. You know, if he turns into a playmaker on par with, you know, Kawhi Leonard or, you know, that sort of, be like, wow, great, exciting. That's really great. I think there's a higher upside for him offensively than that. But at least, you know, set the expectations low. But I think the way he's picking out guys and the way he's kind of taking his teammates off guard in terms of how well he's able to find guys and see things. And also his approach being so much more about finding guys and not forcing it. That's like game changing level stuff in terms of moving him from a guy who's in that 10 to 15 range of the best to really up top five, you know, without question, and closing that gap, I suppose, on the young guy list with Luka.
Yeah, the playmaking is going to be, it's going to be huge for the team, not just his development, but huge for the team. It's going to be huge for Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. It's going to be huge for continuing to reinforce and quell, you know, this like manufactured sort of competition for who's the alpha dog on the team between them two. Like there's going to be so many reasons that that would be healthy for the organization. But, in general, it's interesting that the three ball shooting is coming from these younger players because that will also put Tatum in a leadership position because he's going to be feeding these other younger players, mm-hmm. not necessarily the vets. And, you know, it's Nesmith, it's Langford, and it's Pritchard. It's all these younger guys that they're actually getting all that floor spacing from. We heard the other day that Nesmith broke Tatum's record for the most consecutive three-point attempts without missing two in a row. I can't remember what 200 number it was.
244.
Ridiculous.
244.
244? Okay.
Yeah. Imagine.
And then somebody else tweeted exactly what I thought at that moment. Like, the minute I read that, I was like, Tatum's going to go out there immediately and 50. put that one back down. Yeah. And I can't remember who tweeted it, but I was like, yeah, that, I think that must be what everybody was thinking. Like Tatum ain't going to let that stand. But I guess we'll wait and see if we hear anything about that record again later. But that's, you know, the fact is Tatum had the record. Nesmith came in and challenged it and got pretty pumped up. He's a competitor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we already know how, you know, solid of a shooter Tatum is, mm-hmm. but Nesmith's got a real shot at spacing that floor. Langford in the preseason, and then Pritchard all the way back to summer league, fire. And the range, that's the one, that is the difference between Pritchard and Nesmith and Langford, though, is he can literally be almost four steps back. He's not quite Steph Curry, but he's in that ridiculous range from three and being able to knock him down. And, so I think that also kind of plays into it that if Tatum's feeding those guys, they knock it down. It also builds Tatum's confidence that he's got younger guys that he can rely on. It gives the younger guys who need to keep building confidence, more confidence. So, that's the way that I see it really impacting the entire team and their success.
And I think when you look at last year's team, right, the difference is they didn't have the safety blanket, right? So if this was last year, let's assume you forget last year ever happened. I don't know how you can, because so many things have happened between last year and
I'd like to forget the last 2 years, honestly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's kind of a blur,
for so
right?
Many reasons.
Yeah. But if you were just to ignore last year and you've got young guys in Romeo, Pritchard and Nesmith coming out of the preseason hot, shooting the ball well off of a good, you know, summer league and all that. What your feelings about that season forthcoming are just completely different than last year, where you had that weird thing where there's, you know, it's a short turnaround and no summer league and you're drafted and
then
all of a sudden 5 minutes later. Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay. So take that. Okay. And say, maybe this is a true representation of who those young players are as players. I think that's a very fair read on things to say, you know, this is who Pritchard was going to be. This is who Nesmith was going to be. This is who Romeo is. And if you say that, and now you also have safety blankets in the way of Hernan Gomez and Josh Richardson and Schroeder. So if they don't hit, you've got guys who were, you know, mediocre players. You know, I mean, obviously Schroeder, you know, we know he can do more. He's a sixth man. But you've got something there if they, you know, they forget how to tie their shoelaces. But if they don't, if you don't need those safety blankets, what does your future look like, right? What is your rotation looks like, a team that has, you know, guys who were – you know, who have the potential to be much more than what we thought they were, or maybe as they were portrayed to be. And I think that that's kind of the the paradigm shifted. These are the same guys. There's no difference a year ago to where they are now. The difference is they've had the opportunity. They're building off opportunity, and the Celtics have a break glass in case of emergency option, which they didn't have a year ago. And should we kill? I'm going to, as a Danny Ainge defender, should we kill Danny Ainge for his broken roster construction? I'll kill him. I'll hate the Tristan Thompson and the Teague signing. Sure. But you know, these three guys are still talented players, and Grant has shown up, I think, decently as well. If that's the case, does that make you take a different look at what you had last year? Maybe, maybe not. I'm just saying, like, I think there's just like this, oh, it's so different. It's not different, really. It's Schroeder, it's Vernon Gomez, and it's, Josh Richardson. And there's still the jury is still out as to whether or not how much those guys will impact this team this coming year. And I know people won't necessarily agree with that, but that's how I feel.
Well, it's not all that different than last year. But, and it's still a double big.
Yeah. Double big. Justin's frozen here. So hopefully he's saying that still got the double bigs, but we'll see. We'll see. So while he's frozen, right? He's really thinking about his point here that he's trying to get to, I'm sure.
Mark there is
he's
smart.
Back. He's back. It froze on you there for a second, Justin, just so you know.
What? You froze. Well, my audio and video are going to be good when you download this.
Right. But
you're going to be frozen.
Ooh.
You're frozen.
Ooh.
Freeze him out.
We'll see what happens.
Freeze him out.
We'll have to find out when we get this thing downloaded.
I bet both of them are fine. I bet both of them are fine.
Yeah.
And nobody even knows what happened.
And we're both talking over each other.
Are you? Oh, that's so funny. You were like, hey, why did he finish that thought? Yeah. He just had a chance to talk. So here's the thing. Gotta love Zoom.
Yeah.
All I was saying was it isn't all that different, except that you don't have – you've anointed, you know, Marcus Smart. You don't have Kemba Walker in and out. The double big lineup's the same, except you have one that can shoot.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately, when you go back to the Danny point that you were making, Danny deserves a ton of credit and a ton of respect for his ability to find talent and draft talent. You cannot argue that. One draft does not throw the baby out with the bathwater. He's been an absolute stud. His ability to trade and move around in the draft outside of the year that he had all the glut of middling picks. And, you know, that's not always – you don't always see those get moved for any major crazy, oh, look at me. I traded 22, 24, 26. Now I have the second pick in the draft. Like, that never happens. So, you know, there's times where – you know, people don't want more picks either. Not every team wants a glut of picks. They want one really good player. Mm-hmm. The value they would always say, oh, there's more swings of the bat. Yeah, there's more swings of the bat, but you're batting 150 and you're going to take, you know, batting 500 on an all-star at the top of the draft than batting 150 three different times because your batting average is still 150. Just because you got to the plate three times, you might get, you know, one hit or whatever, but you're still going to take the higher percentage shot and you're trying to win the game. And so one swing of the bat is what it is. So anyway, you got to give him that credit. I think he worked with what he could last offseason. The biggest thing was the Hayward moves. I think they got a little over cocky.
Yep.
That's the criticism that you can definitely throw at him.
Yeah.
But, you know, Brad went out and did all these things and made all these moves and you know, and maybe Danny would have been able to do the same things. Maybe not. You know, there is this whole reputation of can't get fleeced by Danny Ainge. Bad look. And so if anything, you know, maybe that's a reason why we went down this path. You know, who knows? Who knows why this transition happened? But, I do like that Ema, sent some messages. You know, during training camp to some of the players, you know, like, look, you guys got what you wanted, but now you get what you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to hear, it was definitely contextualized in the media that Marcus didn't really take kindly to that situation. But, you know, he's your coach, and a little more heavy handedness, I don't think is a bad thing, especially with a younger group who, you know, other than proving themselves when the vets that they were trying to supplant moved out, once they had that role, you know, they've got a lot to prove. And so I think having a coach that's a, gonna, you know, kind of come with a, maybe not an iron fist, but a, he's, you know, he isn't going to let them bully him, you know, for better or for worse. So as long as he gets along with Tatum and Brown, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You're right. Again, I think obviously you have to, you know, suspend Spartan in that circumstance. What's interesting to me is how he did it and how he's operating. He's operating much more in the press than Brad ever did.
Yeah.
You know, is he, making an issue of it? Is he, you know, is he going Doc Rivers and like sending messages out that way and leaking stuff? No. He's not going to that extent, but he's very clearly making people know this happened. This is what it is. Matter of fact. It's over.
He's not saying nothing to see here.
Right.
He's saying this is what it is, and we're not going to make it more than it is.
Yeah. Which I think is good. I think that's, you know, I think that's a reasonable. I don't like the whole make a big, you know, huge to do about it. It's what happened. Let Smart deal with the fallout from it. And, you know, it's his mistake. And so it's up to him to kind of own up to that. And, you know, it's curious timing, obviously, with the captain's issue, kind of still, you know, simmering and not really sure where that's going to go.
It's not happening, dude. It's good. I bet.
What do you think?
I bet they bail on it. Huh?
You think they're not going to do it? They're not going to do captains?
I think they're going to bail on it.
I think the only way they wouldn't do it, I mean, just because he was speaking in favor of it, is if
I don't think the players want it.
The guys who would be captains say,
I don't want it.
Right. So let's just say Jalen and Jason go to Ime, and I think really you're talking about Jalen just because of his, who he is and the way he,
Jalen and Marcus and Horford are the three front runners.
I think Jason is not that far behind.
Oh, I think he should be there. I don't think he wants it.
I don't know if it's up to him though. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say what I just said. Let me back up. Let me retract that statement. What I'm saying is I think that I think he's thinking a lot more about his leadership. And I think it's also being thrown at him a little bit, which I'm not sure, which is kind of partly what you're saying too, a little bit, which is like, he's not trying to like seek out leadership roles. But I don't know that if you're the best player at that level of trying to be a top five guy, you can run from that. And I don't know that he's running from it. I just don't think he's seeking out the vocal leadership role. I think that's the distinction he's trying to make at the moment. But I think he sees value in leading, but just not as, you know, kind of the rah-rah, you know, guy that I think a lot of fans and a lot of media, you know, kind of want, because it makes it easier for them to understand how you lead in that capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I just don't know what are the responsibilities of the captain from Ema's, you know, like,
yeah,
like if it's a figurehead, this team doesn't want it. Right.
Yeah. No,
so,
there you go.
So that's where we kind of come back to that vocal piece. And so I think it's like this combination of somebody who's already kind of elevated in the players union, you know, representation, somebody who's already kind of a league wide person, you know, who's maybe even spoken out on issues outside of the game. So I can see where, you know, Jalen, where he may not be as vocal, like his captainship has a lot more to do with, like, he's an entrepreneur. You know, he's very, you know, involved in, you know, movements outside of the NBA, you know, mm-hmm. say that kind of globally, right? You know, he's, you know, he contributes to the players union. He's just, you know, he's kind of got this really broad He loves to play chess, right? That was the worst thing that you could ever draft in a player. Somebody who plays chess and reads books.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, the way that, I'm not saying Jaylen Brown's a perfect person or I even know him well enough, but there's definitely been this. He really does everything he can to enrich his life. And he does seem to make a pretty concerted effort to improve other people's lives, right? So I can see a C on somebody for that reason who maybe not be a vocal leader. And then the problem is that that's where I kind of lump Horford in, but you could kind of give a captain to a guy who's been in the league a long time, who's still kind of a silent leader. So I can see Horford kind of getting it. And then you look at somebody like Smart, who is the vocal leader. So the heart and the soul and the effort and the hustle. And so I can kind of see that, but that's really where I land on those three. But then you've got this issue where like, well, Brown's got the captain, but Tatum doesn't. So now that's a problem and it's contributing to the bullshit machine. So then you kind of have to toss Brown out and you got to go back.
Do they like each other? How much do they like? Do they like how much they, you know, who's eats how they eat? You know, does Jaylen like to use a fork and knife when he eats a candy bar or what's the? God, how much neighbor.
What a great opening night game. Tatum, you went off for 60 points. You beat the shit out of Kemba Walker. That must have felt good. Evan Fournier only got 10 minutes, but I'm sure that still felt good too.
Yeah.
And at the same time, what we really want to know is how do you feel about Jaylen Brown having the captainship and you are kind of left sitting off to the side on this one? You know, does that put a strain on your relationship with Ime as he tries to establish himself as the head coach of this young club where we know everybody is sort of catty and bitter because they're not mature? You know, can you please tell us about that, or should we just direct questions like that to Ben Simmons?
Yeah, right. Jason, you went 2 for 10 in the first quarter. Is that because you were upset that you didn't get to shake hands with the referees at the start of the game?
Dude,
your thoughts.
It's just...
Talk about how it's like, gosh, like
it's just so, it's so over the top. So
yeah.
Anyway,
but I
think they're in a lose-lose situation with this captainship. I think they,
I
think if they, especially after the Smart thing, like, what are you going to do? Now you're going to give it to him a week and a half, 2 weeks into the season so that you set the right thing. Now it's this negative, right? It's this whole negative. Like, I bet they wish they had just shut the hell up on this thing and announced it once they decided it internally or not.
The only thing people love more than how much did Jaylen and Jason, you know, like each other and, you know, hang out at each other's houses and, you know, play MASH together, is whether or not who is the captain. Like, that's like pastime right there. Like, it's
a distraction, dude.
Jesus.
It's such a both of those things are a complete distraction.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. All right. I'm going to move on from that because, I've done a really nice job of being optimistic this show. Boom, boom, boom. You know,
but that's nothing to do with how good they are. So it's
it's ridiculous.
Nonsense. I think you're okay. I think you're still positive.
No, I just meant, yeah, but I could go down a dark path pretty quickly.
Okay. I agree. Let's stop that.
And I'm saying I've been really good.
Yeah.
You know,
rightly so.
25 minutes of the show and, you know, last couple of shows, you know,
positive, man. Positive.
Right. Right. That's what I'm saying. So let's stay on that train. We're back and we're better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. I bet you didn't know this was a betonline.ag ad. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to their new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our favorite promo code, our favoriteest, most favorite. Don't ever take it away from us again. CLNS50. That's the promo code, folks. CLNS50. And you'll receive your 50% welcome bonus on that first deposit. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing, stupendous, wonderful offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. I tried to have a little fun with that one.
That was fun. I had a good time just listening.
It was Bigly.
Bigly. Oh.
So you wanted to have some fun on this show.
I do.
And positive. So make it positive.
Uh-huh.
We're skating the line. All right. So why don't you, we're going to do a little debate here or maybe more of a discussion.
I don't know.
I don't even really see the debate till maybe the bottom of the list. So why don't you tell them what we're talking about with the list?
Well, so, okay. So let just as everyone probably knows, in the 75th anniversary, there's a lot of talk about, you know, top 75 players league wide, right? And so the Celtics announced last week that they are going to have their top 15 players, announced, which, you know, there may be a lot of overlap and you wonder how many would be on the Celtics 15 that aren't on the NBA 75 or vice versa. Because I think there's like, probably a lot of overlap and maybe 100% possibly.
Like Jordan Crawford.
Like Jordan Crawford and Gigi Datome. Absolutely. but so just as kind of having fun here.
Brandon Hunter.
And there's nothing everyone likes more than lists of players when you're on a podcast. So you can't really see it. So if you're not an auditory, you know, just take a pen and paper and start writing these names down. Or you can go to @CSL_Duke on Twitter and you can see this as well. But okay. So my came up with my list, right? So my list.
Wait, did you write down a list?
Oh, I had this on Twitter. There's a whole thing going on. Yeah.
Oh, you've already got your list.
I got my list. Right. Okay, so I figured we'd go with my list.
I'm just going to criticize your list.
That's what I was really hoping you'd do is just criticize me. That's really the easiest way to do this. It's just,
you know, it's a
for you
that
to
we
come
even
at me.
Get along. You know what I mean? So like, which one of us gets to be the captain?
Right. I want you to come up my neck on this is really what I'm looking for. I really want to be bleeding out and yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right. So
are these in any particular order is the most important
you know,
question.
Kind of sort of, but not really. I mean, yes.
It doesn't have to be.
It's but, yeah, it
but
doesn't
they
have
are
to be
in every five is sort of in a ballpark.
Right. Like for example, Russell Bird is like 1-2, right?
Right.
And I think you can make an argument in either direction, but I think most people would go Russ 1, Bird 2. Okay? So that's where – I think it, Hondo 3, I think –
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So when you say I would go Russell 1 and Bird 2.
Yeah.
But are you incorporating everything they've ever done?
No.
For the organization or just playing years?
Playing years for the Celtics.
Okay.
So, for example – Max, would Max be on here because he's been a broadcaster for 25 years or because he played in a period of time where he was
So you are
finals
counting
MVP.
His announcing years.
No, I'm not. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, right.
Not
right,
counting
right.
Heinsohn's years as a coach, not counting as a broadcaster. You know, this is just
perfect.
As a player, these are your moments.
As a player wearing a jersey, period.
And not so Tiny Archibald. Great player, all NBA player before he got here, all-star player when he's here, but, you know, his best years were in KC.
Uh-huh.
Garnett's best years.
Last question. Does the number of years that they played for the Celtics count in that, not just how good the years were, but the longer they played for the Celtics? You know, the more years with the Celtics gives them a higher ranking.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
You know,
that's how I would do it.
But there's instances where, and anyone with 3 years or less, I did not count. So for example, Kyrie Irving is not on my list.
He wouldn't be. He has no business.
He's on a different list, but not that one.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
well,
this is,
I can't wait till we talk about Ray Allen, but let's start up on to the top of the list.
Again, a different list.
Wrong list. Good.
All right. So here, okay. So we got Russell Bird. All right. Easy. No questions, right? No questions. Yeah. You go with those two. John Havlicek, Hondo, number three, all-time leader in points, a billion championships, two eras. I mean, maybe not the best player at any point, maybe 73, but really a consistently great player, a sixth man to an all-star starter to linchpin of the team. The longevity there is just hard to ignore. All right. This is where things start to, I got some pushback on this, and
because of your order or because of the people that you've selected,
because of the
final
order.
11 slots. Okay.
Because
so
of
I don't
the
think
order.
We have to get totally hung up on the order, but
right. But I think but for okay. some people, the tier thing, right?
Well, so, I hope you're going Pierce next.
I'm not. I'm going with Bob Cousy next.
See, all right, I'm looking at a similar list.
Yep.
And Cousy was definitely low on this list, yeah. in my opinion.
Yep.
And Cousy had Paul, is, I think had Paul Pierce retired as a Celtic.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to have gone with Pierce here. I love Cousy because he totally embodied that style, you know, for all those years of just win.
Yep.
And every highlight you watch of Red Auerbach basketball has Cousy at the helm,
right.
running the break.
Right.
But I think, you know, you look at the numbers for Paul, scoring numbers, the fact that he made it through really lean times, you know, and then still won the championship and everything else. I'm going with Paul ahead of Cousy.
But that's fair. I did kind of battle those two names back and forth. The reason I went with Cousy is he was an MVP. And you know, kind of an unquestioned one of the top player. He was really the top player, top marketable player in the NBA through the 50s. Yeah. That's, you know, and so the whole thing is I'm talking about guys in their era. Okay. So yeah, if Bob Cousy, if 1957 Bob Cousy came to the NBA today, without any training, any nutrition, any workouts, without knowing that you can actually dribble on the side of the ball, which people don't understand. They get on him because he dribbled on top of the ball. That's because if you had the ball on the side, it's a travel. So
right.
like there's like people like really hate on Bob Cousy. And I think it's completely
no,
absurd.
He played the, he, yeah, it's totally absurd.
He was a trendsetter for that time. Like let's just respect it for what it was. Yeah, okay, you're not as good as 2001. I know. Like, why didn't they have nuclear weapons in the 1800s? You know, I mean, it's just like, come on. Let's just be right. fair with where,
right.
stay in the era. And in that era, he was a truly great player and changed the way the game was played.
Yeah, so I got
Pierce.
Sense.
So then Pierce after that, which again, I think he's gotta be top five. That's more of a longevity argument though than a top of the game argument. And I think it's harder in modern day. Or more modern days to have that top player because there was more competition, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, more teams, more all that. So it's
hard to be
there.
I'm super interested to see where you have Tommy Heinsohn. So let's move on.
All right. Kevin McHale, number six, which is maybe a little yeah. high for some people, but for his moment, I mean, he was there through the whole, won all three championships from 84 to 88. You know, the second best player on the team, certainly. But some of the best teams in NBA history, he's the guy that had more teams had trouble stopping than Bird. I mean, you get Barkley's saying that he was the best I ever played against. So you got McHale.
Yeah, that'd be like saying that with the Lakers, yeah. you wouldn't put Kareem in there just because Magic was
right.
there. You can't
exactly.
do that. You can't
right.
separate
I mean,
that.
Kareem had his moment there, but there's distinctions right. there, right?
Yeah.
So yep. this is where I think Garnett is next for me. And it's a little high. He didn't win nearly as many championships as a lot of guys I'm going to talk about in a minute.
Yeah, but his impact on the culture
night
and the marketing piece.
Night and day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like night and day changed the whole view of the Boston Celtics overnight. And really to this day, what he did is the stuff that the kids are playing now, the players are playing now, what they grew up with. There's something about the Boston Celtics because of that guy. Unbelievable defender. Should have been MVP
yeah.
in 2008.
You bump him up the list, if not just for the folklore of his
yeah.
name. during his time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
I so agree. Heinsohn's next.
Great. Yeah. So you have him higher than a lot of people.
A lot of people don't have him that high. But
yeah.
The first 2 years of his career, he was the scorer on that team. I mean, he was the guy who came in
as a rookie and dominated.
Right. He's rebounding the hell out of the ball. Rookie of the year in 57. You know, his career got cut short a little bit, but he was a crucial piece for those late 50s teams, early 60s Celtics. You know, injuries kind of slowed him. And I think he would have been higher up on a lot of these scoring lists and whatnot if he was able to finish out his career. So I got Sam Jones next.
Okay.
He's the scorer. I mean, he's the scorer of those, of the, kind of as Tommy ebbs, Sam's kind of rising as the key scorer for those 60s teams.
Why not Cowens?
Well, the problem with Cowens for me is the end. His end in Boston, he's part of those really bad Wicks and Rowe teams. The departure in 80 to go to, you know, kind of retire and walk away and just a very strange kind of finish. On the other hand, an MVP, someone who won two titles. So Cowens
smaller center who played the Celtics style of center.
Right.
And took them into that era, coming out of having one of the best centers ever and the best center power forward combo that they had until maybe the 80s came back around. That's a tough position to be in.
It is.
I'll give you Sam Jones ahead of Cowens, but he's got to come in right after that.
And I totally, like, when I look at this list, that's the one I kind of look at and say, geez, I really feel like Cowens should be higher because of what he did. Like you said, changing the culture. He's a big fan. As good as Hondo was, it was Cowens and Tommy coming in that changed the way things worked in the 70s.
Is Billy Howell going to get in your top 15?
No, not at all. No,
not even close.
Not there. Nope. Nope. Not even the 20. You know, cause I had some others that didn't make the list that I kind of talked about, but
all right. Where are we at now? Are we on Bill Sharman?
Bill Sharman, the running mate there for Kuz in the 50s. I mean,
he's not on your list.
Who's that? Billy Howell?
Sharman.
Sharman's next. Sharman's after Cowens.
What number are we at?
I'm 11. 10? I'm down to 11.
Well,
that's
11. Wow. Yeah. We're getting lean. Okay.
We're getting lean. Yeah. I mean, you know, but MVP, all-star, you know, again, the scorer before in the backcourt, the scorer next to Kuz before Sam Jones kind of takes off. Important player in the 50s, a very important player. Those backcourts of the Celtics really were, it was Sharman and Cousy, and they just didn't have the front court defensively to kind of do it. So moving on there, Parrish and DJ. Now Parrish gets the nod over DJ at 12 versus 13 because obviously the three championships as opposed to just the two for DJ, but also the latter end of his career, you know, the 95 season, the 94 season, you know, the years are 94 season, 93 season. He was great. He was great those last few years. And I don't mean to say like that kind of discredits, but he had to keep Kareem in check. That's, you know, people want to talk about Wilt versus Russell.
Oh, I think Kareem could have been higher up that list.
Absolutely.
Honestly. But he definitely could.
The thing is, think about it, we just put
Garnett ahead of Parrish.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that are not doing that.
No.
As great as Kevin was, that's why I asked you the longevity question.
Right.
You know, that may or may not put a Parrish ahead of KG.
Absolutely.
Depending on how you weight that.
But the thing I'm kind of weighing heavily is how high were you at the top of the game? Chief was never a top five guy, maybe even a top 10 guy, you could argue. Always there, always right in the mix, no doubt, because that consistency throughout. But he was never, I mean, like I said, Garnett should have won MVP in 08 without the injuries in 09. They went back to back and we all know the story.
And then you have DJ at 12?
13.
13.
So DJ's a tough one for me. DJ and the next two could be interchangeable.
Let's just consider it that way because I really want to get to who you left off.
So DJ, then JoJo, then Rondo.
Whoa.
Yeah. A lot of people are like, Rondo?
Rondo ahead of Reggie Lewis?
No, Reggie. No. No.
I'm just saying Rondo ahead of Reggie.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So let me just kind of sit in these three for a second. All right.
Okay.
So first of all, DJ, when they lost Tiny, they needed that infusion of talent, right? The 84 does not happen without DJ. Arguably 85 isn't the same without DJ. Now things start to fall off 86, 87, 88. He's not the same player the first two seasons, I think. I think he starts to age, which is, you know, very natural. And I may be biased against DJ because so much of his latter years are kind of what sticks in my mind, but he was so important to 84 and 85. It's difficult to put that aside. And you know, he's the best defensive player. You put him on Magic and that slows Magic down enough to slow down the Lakers. JoJo was crucial to the 70s Lakers, it's crucial to the 70s Celtics. You know, he's the guy pushed the pace. He's got that athletic build that looks like he could have, you know, walked off a football field. Smooth shooter. I mean, it's all right there. Rondo is the controversial one, right? Rondo is the controversy, but you look at Rondo's numbers are better than Tiny's numbers. I know it's crazy. His numbers are better than Tiny's numbers in the early 80s. When you take that number from 09 to 12, Rondo is a better player than Tiny was. And no one wants to believe it, but it's true. You go on, a basketball reference. So those three are there. And then you look at some of those other guys. It's hard to, you know, the biggest one that I kind of looked at that I felt like maybe should be on the list is Max. But I had a hard time.
What about Ed McCauley?
No.
No.
No, I didn't put
Antoine Walker?
No way.
So let me just ask you though.
No freaking way.
When you talk about numbers, why not Antoine?
It's so inefficient. Incredibly inefficient.
I get like the inefficiency.
Absurdly inefficient. You know.
I don't want Antoine in my 15. I just don't know how Rondo gets in there and Antoine's not even in the conversation.
Let's look at Rondo, right? Rondo was the best player, He was the best playoff player from 2009 to 2012. The best playoff player. KG, Paul, Ray, Rondo. That's just what it is.
But don't you think it has something to do with the people that were around him?
I don't think you're scoring 40 points against the Heat because, you know, Paul Pierce is guarding,
is LeBron
and all that.
LeBron,
the way he was dominating those games, it's not just like he was putting up 20 and 10. He was getting 40 points. And for a guy who, like you said, can't shoot. I really think the Rondo, like, controlling things, like, somehow that's gotten lost over time, I think. He was devastating for those 5 years. That's not stuff Tiny was doing. That's not stuff DJ was doing. You know, I mean, he was the guy. It's crazy. So anyway.
How long then before Tatum kicks Rondo off this list?
I don't think it's long. I mean, I think that you're.
If they make the NBA Finals but lose this year, does that take Tatum's? Because think about it. Think about Tatum. Every year, they made the postseason, right?
Yeah.
Every year, and he's had some pretty big postseason performances, like when they kicked the crap out of Philly.
He's still like. I have a hard time with projection for a franchise that's been around 75 years. I have a hard time with living with projections that much.
It's not projection. It's how many years did Rondo play for the Celtics and how many years has Tatum played for the Celtics? He's pretty close already. Like what does he need? Two more seasons before he's matched Rondo's longevity? Like I'm just saying,
let's see.
If 06, all things are equal, when they play 07. The same amount of seasons,
yeah,
of the
two
Celtics,
more seasons. Two more seasons,
yep. Right?
You're right.
So in two more seasons, I don't think there's a question. Rondo, you're out of here.
Probably. I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right.
Probably, definitely.
I mean, think about the people you're saying he's gone past. So let's talk about the omissions, right? He's the guys I left off.
Tatum leapfrogs these people in 2 years if you've got Rondo at 15.
Well, but just look at I'm just saying it's not just Rondo you're talking about here. We're talking about Frank Ramsey. We're talking about Satch Sanders. We're talking about Max. Finals MVP, jump on my back, but
there's
boys,
nothing 84. About Tatum.
Tiny.
Versus Rondo.
Isaiah Thomas.
Like, it doesn't pull Rondo out and you swap in one of these guys.
No.
Isaiah definitely deserves. I get your point. My point is that Rondo is out in 2 years because Tatum.
Doing a 77th. They're doing it 75.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's the 75th anniversary is why they're doing this.
I see what I got it. You're not going to change this list. You're saying
This
is a snapshot in time and it can't be revisited in 2 years.
I mean, if we're making that list for the 77th anniversary of the NBA, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think I would say, you know, Tatum isn't probably just at 15. He's probably closer to like 7 or 8 at that point, you know, but
so why does he make the list today? Yeah.
The challenge for Tatum to me is that how do you take team success? How do you get enough team success to beat out guys who've won rings? Everybody on this list has won a ring or two or three or 11.
Okay.
That's
prerequisite.
Tough. You know,
Tatum's
got
to get a ring to get in here.
Yeah. It's pretty tough. I mean, you got to be
pretty
special.
This season. Are you giving him this season? Can we do this at the end of the year?
Would.
If the Celtics win the championship, Rondo is off and Tatum is on. Deal? That takes us perfectly into our wrap-up conversation. We've hit about an hour, so I'm going to take us to close. That was fun. I don't think I picked you apart like crazy and
no.
We've got some sound. It's pretty sound, you know, and I don't think where it's nitpicking at that point. I'm surprised though you didn't put Danny Ainge in there too. There's definitely plenty of guys kind of, you know, on the fringe of that conversation. But
yeah.
So what are the projections for this year? Because if they win a championship, I'm kicking Rondo off your list. I want a revision.
It's that simple.
That's what we want to have happen.
It feels like you're targeting Rondo. I gotta say, it feels a little bit like, you know,
I'm channeling
the Rondo thing is really like, I believe you said once he can't even hit the backboard. I think on a shot was.
I think that's what my dad said.
No. You know, you said it. I remember. This was not a dad head. This was a Jughead original. I remember.
Yeah, because it happened. It definitely happened.
Oh man.
Might not have happened as often as I liked to,
Right. Yes.
Give it crap,
course.
Okay. So
anyway,
what are your projections, you know, for the Celtics? Like how many simple stuff, how many games do they win and what seed, in the Eastern Conference do they get? Because Philly would have been a tough contender, but I think they're out of that conversation right now. They're dysfunctional as all get out.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that they are probably, I'm a little bullish on them. I think I'm bullish on them. So I'm saying 49 wins.
Yeah. I was going to say 48.
We always do that. We're always a little more.
I know.
It's crazy.
It is really weird. We're usually within one game.
Yeah.
Remember when we were like, Hayward, Kyrie, 55.
Yeah.
54.
I can't go 50. And also the COVID thing and not knowing who you miss and all that stuff. But I like the depth. I think the depth is good enough. I think Tatum is going to level up this year. I'm not sure what we're going to get out of Brown. Not bad. I'm just saying like we haven't really seen enough of him in the preseason other than that one, you know, half where he went, you know, bananas. So I think that they're going to scratch out that, you know, kind of 48, 49 win territory, which is a good solid season. I think they're going to be better I think they're going to be a better regular season team than a postseason team.
Interesting.
Because of the youth. I think the youth is not going to quite be there. And so I think it will probably be, you know, second round exit. I'd love to see them in the conference finals.
I think there could be a little bit of a move once they see what they have and everything else.
That would change
things. So I think Brad has positioned them to potentially make a play and perform much better in the postseason. So I think we'll have to wait and see, but I still think 48 wins. And I think they're going to land in at that fourth spot. So yeah. What are your thoughts on what seed they get?
I would say 48 wins. It's going to be close.
I'm sorry, 49.
It's going to be close. I think they can ego the third seed.
Yeah.
I think they can get there. I think it's all going to be pretty close. 3, 4, 5, 6. I think all those, I think it's going to be a go right down to the last day for who's going to break through.
Who do they play the last week? Who are the teams that are going to be I know it's so, I didn't really think about it till just now.
Let's do our predictions for the last week of the season.
I'm more or less thinking about what you just said about how they're going to be crammed in that 3 through 6. So who are they playing down the stretch? Because that will tell us how much control over their destiny they might have.
All right. So the last 5 games are the Pacers, Wizards, Bulls, Bucks and Grizzlies. Bucks could be resting everybody by that.
Yeah, point. I was just going to say, so the Bucks are out of that. The Grizz are, you know, the team they're punching against most likely in that 3 through 6, if anybody is Indiana,
maybe the Bulls.
Maybe the Bulls.
You know, the Bulls, they went out and got all that talent, but that could also fail spectacularly too. Yeah. I'm not a big believer in what they have there. So, I don't think they have enough defense personally, but yeah, I agree. I think it could come down to that last week and trying to figure out, you know, the jockeying for position thing. The Celtics do have a tough, they have a tough December. You know, kind of looking at the schedule, you know, they've got the Jazz, they got, the Lakers, they got the Clippers, they got the Suns, they got the Bucks, they got the Warriors, the Sixers again, the Bucks again, the Clippers again, the Suns again. I mean, their December is kind of hellish. January is much nicer to them with some, you know, playing New Orleans and Charlotte and Detroit and Orlando, and things get a lot easier, in January, but December is a tough run. It's not too bad, in November. So they've got to kind of get going, but if they don't have, if they haven't hit their stride by the start of the month of December, kind of that first, the end of that first full month, I guess it could be a slog just looking at the type, or we're getting to Christmas and we're getting, you know, really optimistic because they're able to put a hurt on some of these teams that maybe we wouldn't think they would be able to. Certainly playing Golden State early on is a good thing, before, Klay Thompson comes back. So, let's hope that works out well for them.
They got a puncher's chance.
Yeah. Puncher's chance. Yeah. I like it. I like that.
Yeah, it's all about health once again, folks.
I think so. Yeah. And
it really is.
And having depth now.
Yeah, but the depth is there. So now it's about the right players staying healthy. And you know, I don't care how much they've bolstered in the big man department. If you're struggling to keep Al Horford and Robert Williams in lineups, that's going to take a major toll. Major toll.
And Cantor's going to play more than they think.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, enjoy the first game of the season opening night. By the time you listen to this, probably that'll be tonight. But I hope everybody enjoys it, has some fun. Celtics basketball, it's back. So's John. So's Justin. That's me. And We will talk to you on the flip side after the start of the season. We see what this team kind of shows us. I did not get enough in preseason, so I'm glad we're starting the real season. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can support Celtic Stuff Live by following at CSL underscore tweet live on Twitter. John is at CSL underscore Duke. I am at CSL underscore Justin. A heartfelt thank you to everybody for tuning in. And a heartfelt thank you for tuning in. Honestly, heartfelt thank you. We always say it's heartfelt. There it is. It's the heart. On behalf of the founder of CLNS Media, Nick Gelso, and my co-host, John Duke, I'm Justin Poulin. Oh, there's the heart.
Aww.
If you are watching on YouTube, please do tube. That was dumb.
So dumb.
That's going to do it for this edition of Celtic Stuff Live.